WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. My guest is filmmaker James Toback. His movies and personal life have been the subjects of controversy. His movies for their sex, violence, and sometimes pretentiousness. His personal life for his alleged womanizing. Film critic David Thompson described Toback's film Fingers as one of the most intense American pictures of the 70s. Thompson described Toback as having an unnerving mixture of tyranny and sensitivity. Toback also wrote the screenplay for The Gambler and wrote and directed Exposed and The Pickup Artist. His new film is a personal documentary called The Big Bang. Toback gathered together a collection of friends and acquaintances, including basketball star Daryl Dawkins, writer Veronica Gang, jazz composer Julius Hempel, and violinist Eugene Fodor, and interviewed them about intimate subjects such as sex, religion, death, and family. I asked Toback if the camera gave him the license to ask these intimate questions, or if he could have asked those questions anyway.
I'm brazen in the way I ask questions of everybody. I have made a habit of asking whomever I've been with, whatever has been on my mind since I can remember. And it has endeared me and gotten me very close to a lot of people, very deeply and very fast, and antagonized a number of people who are horrified, enraged, and even hateful sometimes because of it. It's a very insinuating and challenging way of approaching the world, and it works in my favor and it works against me, but I have found that when it works in my favor, it's with people that I really wanted to get to know. And when it works against me, it sort of serves as a litmus test to eliminate those people that I wouldn't have had all that much to do with anyway.
Now, you tell the producer on film that when he's dead, this is the one thing he's going to be remembered for, producing your movie. It takes a lot of arrogance to make a statement like that. Does it take arrogance to make a movie?
Well, absolutely. It's a huge claim on the cosmos. I mean, what you're really saying is, I, among the 5 billion people on Earth, have a vision, a story, an idea, a group of people, a film, sound that I want to penetrate the consciousness of the planet with and have in a box on shelves all over after I'm dead. And, of course, the obvious response to that on the part of the other 4.999 billion people is, so what? We all do. And there is, on a democratic level, no real answer to that challenge. But finally, one has to make one's own claim to justification on Earth, or else what's the point in continuing to exist? And mine is that what I'm going to come up with is going to interest and fascinate and engage at least some people. I don't claim to be a mass popular entertainer, and I therefore would never be asking for a huge amount of money to make a movie because it wouldn't make sense. But within the limited realm that I feel I can work well in, I do feel a confidence that I think is justified.
I think most of your movies are about subjects that obsess you: romantic love, sex, music, gambling. Do you need to be obsessed before making a movie, obsessed by the subject?
Absolutely. I would be a mediocre director at best in material that came, probably that came from somebody else, period. Certainly that came from somebody else that didn't really engage me totally, because I didn't come to movies out of experience, craftsmanship, education. I came to it by instinct, compulsion, and urge. To go about filmmaking in the normal way, that is to say by training, by experience, by experiment, technically, is something where I come up very short, and I would feel I was swimming in the wrong pool.
Your 1978 movie, Fingers, starred Harvey Keitel as a young classical pianist who also collects on his mobster father's debts, and he collects using his gun and using his fists. So he's part artist and part gangster. Do you see yourself as being part both, too?
Well, I don't qualify as a gangster, fortunately. I think that I have had a lot of associations through the years because of, let's say, problems I've created for myself through various obsessions that have brought me in touch with people. But it contact with gangsters is all one needs to show one that one is certainly not a gangster. I mean, it's a very special world, and one that I would find it probably unbearable to live in as a main way of life. I think as a kind of fringe life, there's a certain intrigue. People who are flaunting death all the time and breaking the law, but it's not something I would want to live myself. Being an artist or thinking of myself as an artist is something that's hard to say. You start to take yourself a lot more seriously than you should when you think of yourself that way. What I do think is that I found a way of expressing things that I always wanted to express through film. I tried it as a musician. I tried it as a novelist. I tried it as a journalist. I tried it as a short story writer, as a poet, and didn't feel that I was close to expressing any of it adequately in any of those forums. So fortunately, I found film where I do feel that there is some chance of getting through.
What kind of musician were you, by the way, classical or rock and roll?
Bad classical and worse rock and roll.
What did you play?
The piano and the guitar. And I came across a tape recently of some Telemann piano pieces that I played and destroyed them.
Lest, oh, really?
Lest anybody ever hear them, yeah.
Lest you hear them again, too?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you about another movie. The Gambler had your screenplay, and it starred James Caan as a compulsive gambler.
Right.
Now, you've been a gambler yourself. I don't know if you still gamble or not, but
I try not to.
Uh-huh. How did you start gambling?
It's an interesting question. I guess I started with a dreidel when I was 5 years old. There's something strange about gambling in the Jewish tradition. There's an inordinately high percentage of Jewish gamblers in America, and also an inordinately high percentage of guilty Jewish gamblers. The percentage of gamblers in Gamblers Anonymous who are Jewish is obscenely high. You sometimes feel you're at a Seder. And I don't quite know why that is, but I think I did start with a dreidel and then with baseball cards, and so that before I was 11, without ever having bet more than a quarter on anything, I probably would have qualified as a compulsive gambler. And then once I started visiting casinos and reading Dostoevsky, the two things became intermingled, and it was very tough not to get going with it.
Wait. What's the connection of Dostoevsky to your gambling?
Well, Dostoevsky was the seminal literary, psychological, religious, emotional, philosophical influence on my life. I had read just about every word he'd written by the time I was 15 and was rather foolishly enacting the more bizarre characters' behavior in his novels. I mean, Rogoshin's mad passionate love. When I was 14, I was going around carving threatening messages on girls' doors when they weren't responding properly. So, I mean, I could have gotten into a lot of trouble through Dostoevsky. And one of the things that happened was I got so chemically, with a chemical inclination towards gambling anyway, I got so hooked into his obsession with gambling, both as an individual, reading about him, and the way he wrote about it in his novels, that no sooner did I have a casino available to me that I felt I was in my milieu.
Gambling has given you subject matter for your movies. Has it ever interfered, though, with making movies?
I think that gambling both inspires by its forcing you to be on your toes and keeping you honest about mortality and the fragility of existence, and also is always an interference because it takes up time, emotional and psychic energy. So it both inspires and drains simultaneously.
Well, it takes up money, too.
Yes, it takes up money, no question about that.
Another passion of yours you've already mentioned, which is music, and both rock and roll and classical music. You seem to be particularly obsessed from your movies with oldies from the 50s. What are some of the musical extremes you've gone to?
Well, I was a regular on the Alan Freed Rock and Roll Party.
Oh, no, really?
Sure,
as a dancer?
As a dancer,
oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
When he was on from 4 to 5 on Channel 5, 5 days a week, I used to do it in the summers. And I always loved all of Alan Freed's whole rock and roll family. And actually, there's a line in Fingers where Harvey Keitel, who's playing loudly on his tape, Summertime, Summertime by the Jamies,
yes,
says to a guy who's angry at him for playing it loud in the restaurant, this is the most musically inventive song of 1958, and it was.
So do you still dance?
No. I mean, I got to lose weight. I gained weight. I used to be really thin. I got to lose 35 pounds, then I'll start dancing again. It's terrible. Jackie Gleason was the only great overweight dancer in history, and I got to get back down to 155 before I dance.
Another movie that you made, and this is one of your more recent ones, is called The Pickup Artist. And it's about someone who's obsessed with picking up young women and is always trying out new lines on them and using time-tested ones as well. And I think this gets to another obsession of yours, which is sex. And there were rumors that Pickup Artist was based on your own habit of picking up women. And there was also a Spy magazine article about a year ago that said that you've approached many women on the street, shown them your director's card, and invited them to have sex. I can't speak to the credibility of any of this, but for me, you know, like reading this article about you and mm-hmm. having seen your movies, let me tell you what it made me think about.
Right.
I've seen Pickup Artist and Fingers, and I like both films very much. They're both in part about sexual obsession. One gets at it through a very kind of bleak drama, and the other gets at it through a much more lightweight kind of romantic comedy, but they're both really fascinating films. And this kind of obsession that I really thought was very convincing, very interesting on film, kind of scares me in real life. Do you know what I mean? It's not something I'd want to contend with in real life, though as art, I find it really interesting subject matter. And it made me think about the differences between art and life.
Well, I think that that's true of almost all separations, and they're very delicate. I think one of the reasons people become artists is precisely, to avoid needing to do the things that they want to write about and feel compelled to write about. I mean, if someone, for instance, writes about, like, this movie Henry, these guys
making
the movie,
of a serial killer.
Yeah, they felt compelled to make a movie about a serial killer. Now, I don't know them personally, and I don't know whether they're closet serial killers, but I do know that you don't make a movie about a serial killer as well as that one is done unless you have some real interest in it and unless you'd prefer to make a movie about it rather than do it. Let me just say, because you brought it up in relation to the Spy article, that particular article was a complete series of lies and inventions. People always say, well, why don't you sue if it's not true? You literally cannot win a libel suit unless it is so blatant and so outrageous and so conscious. The law in America is totally stacked against, which is what Spy thrives on and lives on.
You mentioned Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, as an example of a film about mass murder that was probably not made by a mass murderer, but of someone who had some
inclination towards it.
Uh-huh. Now, I guess the difference is, like, in your movies, it seems most of your movies, your obsessions that are on screen are obsessions you've actually acted out in real life.
Well, no. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Some yes, some absolutely not. I mean, the more violent aspects of the films, the violent aspects of Fingers, collecting, killing, blowing people's heads off, these are not things that have been part of my life. I mean, I know enough about them and have been around them enough to write legitimately about them. But there's been a tremendous amount of displacement. I mean, I gamble, but I don't. When I was teaching, I was not, you know, getting a student to dump games, which is what Jimmy Kahn does in The Gambler. And there's a danger when there is enough autobiographical similarity in thinking that it's full autobiography. And in the case of The Pickup Artist, the guy was 21 years old, which unfortunately right now is less than half my own age. And I was making fun of the character. I mean, The Pickup Artist is not a straight film. It's a comedy. It takes sexual obsession and romantic obsession and treats them in a kind of playfully mocking way.
Do you or have you ever picked up women, or do you think that's nobody's business to begin with?
Well, I mean, Compulsively
is what I mean.
I don't feel that I'm compulsive about that any more than I am about anything else in life. First of all, at this stage of my life, I'm in love. I have a girlfriend. I'm very happy. But I also, in my past and at various times in my life, have always felt that it integrated very naturally into my life. The only habit that I've ever had that I felt was completely out of control and self-destructive was smoking, which I did 4 to 5 packs a day for 20 years. And I was very much aware every time I lit up a cigarette that I was harming myself and nothing else, and yet I continued to do it.
Hmm. In your movie Exposed,
yeah.
you had a role in the beginning as a very intense, very pretentious, sexually manipulative professor.
Yeah.
And in the lecture that you're giving to your class in the opening of the movie, you say, the Western world is breaking down socially, politically, economically, morally, aesthetically, psychologically. There's only two routes for escape, art and romantic love.
Now, see, there's a perfect example of what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
I'm glad you thought of it, because I wouldn't have. But I took a character and made fun of him and played him and made fun of myself and at the same time share some of the views that that character has. I mean, it's very clear to me that that character in the scene with Nastasia, whom he's living with at the time and she's getting rid of him, is a lout. And I have no objection to playing a lout as an actor. I have no objection to seeing the world from everybody's point of view, including the point of view of a lout, or else you can't write. If you're going to write just from a kind of journalist point of view or essayist point of view, then you should be an essayist, not a filmmaker. But the Western world is breaking down notion is, in fact, something that I at least see every side of. I share to a degree.
Why did you cast yourself in that role? Did you write it for yourself?
No, I didn't. I actually tried about 10 other people, and I didn't get anybody who could do the two things that I needed in that role. One, someone who could handle literary and rather pompous language in a conversational way, and then also somebody who could play the scene with Nastasia in a kind of improvisational, oppressive way. And I did honestly feel that I could do both effectively. By the way, Woody Allen just cast me in this film that he finished now as a college English teacher who is interviewing Mia Farrow for his class and then who lectures. So I'm playing a teacher again. We shot it a couple of months ago.
Can I ask you a couple of questions that you ask people who you interview in The Big Bang?
Absolutely.
Are you afraid of death?
No, I'm eager for it. I got to watch out. I mean, I am absolutely fascinated by the idea of dying and by knowing that I have to die and by the whole mystery of what it is or isn't and anything that you, I mean, even going to a doctor that you know you have to go to see or have an operation, there's a perverse fascination in actually doing something that you know you're going to have to do. And since death is the only thing you really know you're going to have to do, I think it's almost irresistibly intriguing. And I was always curious, interested in about suicide from the time I can remember, simply because, not out of depression, but simply because of being fascinated by death and what it is. And the three or four times I've come close to dying and really thought I was going to die, I was always exhilarated, never afraid.
Do you think that leads to self-destructive behavior?
It may. I mean, I'm not aware of it. Let's put it this way. When you go for a swim and the undertow is strong and you're swimming straight out and you realize you might not be able to get back unless you turn back right then, but you enjoy the sunset you're swimming into, so you continue swimming out another 100 yards without looking back, one could question your reasons more than just pleasure in swimming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Screenwriter and director James Toback, his new film is The Big Bang.